for inviting me to Parameter and giving me a chance to present our recent work on the dye and condensation in topological multi-insulators. And this work is done in collaboration with Chen Kesu at UC Santa Barbara, Joel Moore at UC Berkeley, and Yongbek Kim at University of Toronto. And I'm Gil-Young Cho from UC Berkeley. So this is the plan for today's talk. And in the first part, as advertised, I would like to talk about the dye and condensation in topological multi-insulators. But if time allows, I would like to discuss the proximate phases of the Z2 spin locket on the Kagomelaris, which I have worked with Yuanming Wu and Ashwin Vishwanath at UC Berkeley. So I begin with a brief introduction for the topological insulators. And this class of materials becomes quite famous recently and even showed up in the American TV show Big Bang Theory. So you can see the topological insulator is in this scene. And the topological phase is a gapped phase, which doesn't have a local order parameters, but still different from a trivial insulator in that I cannot turn the topological phase into a trivial phase in the adiabatic sense. And the topological phases sometimes have the gamlins at the surface state. And the examples of the topological phases are quadrimal states, topological insulator, and gapped spin lockets. And there are two subclasses of the topological order. The first one is the intrinsic topological order, and the other is the symmetry protected order. And the intrinsic topological order doesn't require any symmetry to be present, like fractional quadrimal states. But for the symmetry protected topological order, it requires certain symmetry to be present in the systems. And the topological insulator is also a symmetry protected phase and is well defined only when the time reversible symmetry is present. And so topological insulator is a time reversible symmetric band insulator. And for the time reversible symmetric band insulator, you have Z2 classifications. That is, there is only one non-trivial class which we call topological insulator. And we have a trivial class, which is trivial insulators. And if I make an interface between them, then in the interface, you always have the gamless edge states. And the gamlessness of the edge states is protected by time reversible symmetries. And this gamlessness can be illustrated easily in the prototypes of the 2D topological insulator, which is simply the two copies of the integer quorum effect with opposite chirality. So if I look at the boundaries of the 2D topological insulator, then there are one right mover and one left mover. And then to get out the spectrum, you need to scatter the right mover to the left mover. But this process is prohibited by time reversible symmetries. So the edge state is stable as far as the time reversible symmetry is present in the systems. And this non-trivial topological insulator can be labeled by a Z2 index, which is simply the integration of the baryon curvatures over the Brillouin zone. Or you can understand it intuitively by the crossings between the Fermi levels, between the bands, where the bands are lying between the bulk conduction and the valence bond. So in the trivial class, we have even number of the crossings, but for the non-trivial class, we always have the odd number of the crossings. And the similar topological insulator can be defined in the three special dimension two. And in the three special dimension, we again have a Z2 index. And for the non-trivial class, we have a single Dirac cone on the surface. And the gamless surface state, Dirac fermion state, is protected by time reversible symmetries. And this Z2 index can be understood as the even or oddness of the number of the Dirac fermions on the surface of the topological insulators. And the three-dimensional topological insulator is also observed in the experiment, like bismuth selenide. And the Hassan's group at Princeton did some RPX experiment where the photons are kicking out the electrons out of the sample. And they obtained the spectrum that looks like this, where the bulk is gapped by 0.3 electric volt, while there is some surface state intervening the bulk gap, and the surface state is more or less than the Dirac fermions. So we established that the three-dimensional topological insulator has a Dirac fermion on the surface. And then one can ask one interesting question. What happens if the time reversible symmetry is removed on the surface? Then I will show that the topological insulator realizes the external electromagnetisms. So I'd like to talk about the axionic response and the dyons. So we begin with the Dirac fermions living on the surface of the topological insulators, and I'd like to remove the time-reversal symmetries. I remove the time-reversal symmetry by explicitly introducing the magnetizations on the surface. Then this system can be studied easily by this simple Hamiltonian, where first term is for the Dirac fermion and the other term is for the magnetizations. Then it's easy to solve this Hamiltonian, and then you can see that the spectrum is fully gapped. So if I remove the time reversal symmetry on the surface of the topological insulator, then you generically expect to have the gapped Dirac fermion on the surface of the topological insulators. So what's interesting about the gapped Dirac fermions? In fact, the gapped Dirac fermion has a half of the integer Kolmogorov effect. That is, if I make an interface between the ferromagnets and the topological insulators, then the surface state carries exactly the half of the whole conductance quanta. So the gapped Dirac fermion state carries the half of the integer Kolmogorov effect. And then one can ask how to capture this half of the integer Kolmogorov effect in terms of the effective theory. Then I will show that this simple axionic response can capture the surface Hall effect, where the axion term can be written in terms of the E dot B, or you can write in terms of the field strength F with the antisymmetric tensors. And the coefficient theta here is called axion or axionic angle. And so that's why this term is called the axionic response or axionic electromagnetisms. So this term can capture the surface Hall effect because this axion term can be written in terms of the gauge field A. And one notes that this axion term can be written in terms of the toroidal derivative of the Chern-Simon terms. And I can integrate up to the boundaries. So the axion term is basically the same as the surface Chern-Simon terms. And the surface Chern-Simon term tells me that there will be a surface Hall effect living on the boundary of the topological insulators. And then, so we saw that the axion term can capture the surface Hall effect. And then one can ask what axion angle should be for the topological insulators. So we'd like to choose the axion angle for the topological insulators. One constraint is it should be constant with the half of the integer Kolmogorov effect coming from the Dirac fermions, which has exactly the half of the whole conductance. And we'd like to choose theta to be constant with this. Then that tells me we should choose theta should be pi for the topological insulators, or one can observe that the theta is defined modulo 2 pi, and the time reversal symmetry maps theta to minus theta. So for the topological insulators, from these two requirements, theta should be 0 or pi, but theta is 0 is trivial, so theta should be pi for the topological non-trivial phase. And from these two considerations, that topological insulator should have a theta equal pi. So what I have shown is the topological insulator with a gapped surface state realize the axionic response with the axion angle pi. Okay, we have the axionic response from the topological insulators. So what's interesting about axions? Actually, axion has an interesting consequence in the monopole's electric charge. So if I introduce a monopole into the axionic electromagnetisms, then the monopole acquires certain electric charge. And the monopole is turned into a dion. Dion is simply a monopole carrying some electric charge. And this effect is called the Witten effect. So we'd like to compute the electric charge of the monopoles. So what I do is take a variation of the axion term with respect to gauge field. Then you see that the electric charge is proportional to the divergence B, and the divergence B is the monopole densities. So you can see that the electric charge is proportional to the monopole densities. So if I introduce the monopole into the axionic electromagnetisms, then it acquires some electric charge. For example, in the topological insulator where theta is pi, if I introduce a unit monopole, which is 2 pi flux, then it acquires exactly the half of the half of the electron's charge. And this effect can be checked in the numerical simulation too. And Marcel Frentz and his collaborator did some numerics. And they considered the topological insulator Hamiltonians, lattice Hamiltonians. And you turn on the magnetic flux adiabatically so that you have a monopole in the bulk of the topological insulators. And then they keep track of the electric charge around the monopoles. And they found that the monopole carries exactly the half of the electron's charge. You see there is 0.5. And this is constant with the axion angle to be pi.
How is the
Yeah, they turned on the string here, and then fluxes are going up. Yeah. So let me summarize a little bit. So the topological initial layer with the gapped surface state realized the axionic electromagnetisms with the axion angle pi. So the axionic electromagnetisms with the axion angle pi turns a monopole into the dion with the half electric charge. And from these two reasonings, it's natural that a monopole in the topological initial layer will be turned into a dion.
How important is it that the charge be close to the monopole? I mean, in general, it's actually parallel.
Why is it parallel? I guess it's gapped, so.
No, because the magnetic field is everywhere from this monopole, mm-hmm. and it can induce other terms that mm-hmm. break down reversal everywhere. So
it yes, it breaks time reversal everywhere. Yeah, but the Barker is always gapped, so I expect it to be exponential little collapse.
No, it's not. In fact, that same paper they showed plots mm-hmm. where it decays parallel mm-hmm. in space. Mm-hmm. So is it important for you that the charge is really sitting on the dion within some? I mean, like if you just do the Dirac model, it's on the dion. But if you do, like if you add a Zeeman term, mm-hmm. this will induce charge everywhere mm-hmm. in a parallel decaying way. Mm-hmm. So is it important for the charge to be close to the monopole for what you're going to say later, or is it not?
In terms of the field theories, I think I don't need to care,
okay.
but I guess physically it should enter somehow, maybe yeah, but I don't have an answer right now. But
okay.
Yeah, we can discuss further.
Sure, thanks. So, mm-hmm. what about the spin quantum number?
It doesn't carry any spin quantum numbers. I didn't talk about dions yet, but it doesn't carry any spin quantum numbers.
Okay, why?
Because spin is not conserved at all. In the topological initial layer samples, you cannot define spin at all in the dion or monopoles. No. What do you mean, the spins?
So you can have some, because you have spin over coupling,
mm-hmm.
you can have L plus J.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it carries any quorum numbers, but yeah, it doesn't change our result much. Yeah, it doesn't change our result at all, I think. Let me keep going, and then I will explain later at the end of the. Okay, so we find an interesting physics with the dions and axionic electromagnetisms, and we found the condensed matter systems where we can have dions and axions, and so it's natural to look for some interesting physics induced by dions and axions. And the axion term is basically turning a monopole into the dions, and the dion is a monopole carrying some electric charge, so it carries some different quorum numbers from the monopoles. And this underlies the physics of the oblique confinement in the high energy context, and we'd like to have some condensed matter examples where the dion and axion term can induce some non-trivial physics. And I will show that the if we consider the dion condensed phase, then this dion condensed phase will demonstrate the non-trivial physics associated with the axion terms, and it will be different from the monopole condensed phase. So we don't like to consider the dion condensed phase to have some non-trivial physics associated with the axions. So we don't like to have the dions first. And to have the dions, we don't like to have the monopoles in the spectrums. That is, we don't like to have the compact Yuan gauge theory or non-abelian gauge series. And the simplest realization will be a lattice Yuan gauge theory, which will be naturally compact. And we'd like to have the dions, that is, we'd like to have the axionic response that will turn a monopole into the dions. So to have the axionic response, we'd like to have the topological band structures or topological insulators. And these requirements are met by a phase, which we call a topological multi insulator, which is a fractionalized phase. And due to the fractionalizations, you have emergent Yuan gauge theory. So the topological multi-insulator can be thought as a Yuan spinnaket. And in the topological multi-insulators, the fermionic spinon is in the topological band structures. So the topological multi-insulator is basically a Yuan spinnaket with the topological band structures. Okay, and in such a phase, the dion will naturally appear because Yuan gauge theory will generate the monopoles, and the monopole will be turned to the turned into a dion due to the exciting response. So, and the topological multi-insulator is originally proposed by Pesson and Balance to study the correlation, to study the interplay between the correlation and the spin orbit interactions. And they employed some slave rotor formalisms. And then they look at the phase where the correlation and the spin orbit are both large. And they found a phase where the charged degree of freedoms, which is bosonic, is gapped, while the fermionic degree of freedom is in the topological insulator phase. And they named this phase as topological multi-insulators. And in this phase, because of the fractionalizations, you have a U-engaged theory. And this phase is the beginning point of our following discussions. Okay. So the topological multi-insulator is a U-unspinner kit with the topological band structures. And so it will have the external response and the monopole excitations. So it will have a dion as an excitation from the interplay between the external response and the monopoles. So in this talk, I want to show the dion condensation will be different from the monopole condensations because of the non-trivial physics associated with axion terms. You can easily guess this because dion carries electric charge, so you will have more Coulomb number than monopoles. So dion condensed phase should be different from the monopole condensations. And I will show this in the context of the U1 spinner kit by considering the usual monopole condensations in the U1 spinner kit and the dion condensation in the topological multi-insulators. Okay, so I'd like to compare the dion condensations and the monopole condensations. So I begin with the monopole condensation of the usual U1 spinner kit in the bipartite lattices. And here, usual, I mean the spinner kit doesn't carry any topological response. So there are some standard procedures for the monopole condensed phase in the usual U1 spinner kit. And one can look at some references. And we begin with the spinner kit where the metal fields are gapped. So we begin with integrating out the gapped metal fields to obtain the effective gauge theory, which is more or less than Maxwell's electromagnetization magnetism series. And we are interested in the monopole condensed phase. So we introduce a monopole into the gauge theory. And we are allowed to do so because gauge theory lives on the lattice. So the gauge theory will be compact. So we introduce the monopole into the gauge theory. And we'd like to have the theory written in terms of the monopoles. That is, we'd like to perform duality transformations. And we end up with a theory for the monopoles. So we obtain a theory for the monopoles. And from the theory for the monopoles, one can identify the Coulomb numbers and the physical order parameters constructed out of the monopoles. And from these informations, one can finally obtain the symmetric breaking patterns of the monopole condensed phase. It's okay, you don't understand all of this. I will go through a little bit slowly. So we begin with the fractionalization of spins. For example, one can employ some Cipierian representation of spins, where I fractionalize spins into the two bosonic objects, which carries the spin up and down indices. And one notes that this spin operator is invariant under the phase rotation of the spinners, where I rotate z to z to d to I zetas. And this spin operator is invariant under phase rotations. And this is the origin of the compact U-engaged series we are looking at. And we are looking at the spin kit in the vicinity of the near phase, where the bosonic degree of freedom is gapped. And we integrate out the metal fields to obtain the effective gauge series. So it's easy to guess the effective gauge series. Actually, we have two terms. The first term is the Maxwell term, which tells me that I will have the photon in the spinner kit phase. And the other term is the coupling between the staggered background charge with the gauge field. So where do we have the staggered background charge terms, which is not usually present in the gauge theory? The reason is we are interested in the spinner kit in the vicinity of the near phase. And in the near phase, we have staggered spin orderings. And the bare phase of the spins manifests itself as the staggered gauge charges. in the gauge theory. And the size of the charge is proportional to the size of the spins. And this is derived in the references. So we have the Maxwell's term with the staggered gauge charge terms. And upon identifying the gauge theories, one can introduce the monopoles where I replace the field strength by the field strength plus some rank 2 antisymmetric tensor, which parameterizes the monopole 4 current. So the monopole 4 current in the system can be written as this. And after introducing the monopole 4 current, we'd like to have the theory for the monopole 4 current. That is, I'd like to perform the dualities. It's something you input. It's bipartite lattice, so the magnetically ordered state is naturally new phase. Yeah, bipartite lattice. Yeah. And then I know it's technical, but I'll go through a little bit quickly here. And then so we have we'd like to have the theory for the monopole 4 current, and that is we'd like to perform the dualities. Duality transformation means I'd like to integrate out everything on the direct lattice and then write down the theory in terms of the dual theories. And after the long calculations, you can have a theory. But what theory tells me that the monopoles are hopping around in the staggered background charges. So the dual theory tells me that the monopoles are hopping around in the staggered background charges. And because of the staggered background charges in the bipartite lattices, there will be electric fields coming from one sublattice to the other sublattices. So the electric field will thread the lattice. And when the monopoles are moving around, it will acquire some bare phase from the electric field because it's exactly dual to the case where the electric particle is moving around the magnetic flux. And we know when the electric particle is moving around the magnetic flux, it acquires some bare phase. So when the magnetic monopole is moving around the electric fluxes, it will acquire some bare phase. Yes, sure. So the theory we end up with is monopoles are hopping around in the presence of the staggered background fluxes. And then this is the dual lattice, and then this is dual plaquette. OK, so without hoppings, monopole band is flat and is gapped. But when the monopole starts to hop, the monopole band will acquire some bandwidth proportional to the hopping parameters. It's simply the hopping problems on the lattice with the fluxes. So it should be elementary to calculate. And the monopole will condense at the minimum of the monopole band. Okay? Monopole will condense at the minimum of the monopole band. So it's very important to determine the monopole band precisely. And when you determine the monopole band, you need to take care of the electric fluxes because monopole will acquire some bare phase when it goes around. So the electric flux enters into the theory in the monopole band structures. Okay. So due to the bare phase for the monopoles, the bare phase will frustrate the monopole hoppings on the lattice. And if you look at the monopole spectrums, then the minimum of the monopole band is at finite momentums. So the monopole condensation will naturally break the translation symmetries. Okay, monopole will condense at finite momentums. That tells me that the translation symmetry will be broken. And monopole doesn't carry the spin quorum numbers. So the monopole condensed phase should be a phase where the translation symmetry is broken, but the spin rotational symmetry is respected. And let me go through. So the translation symmetry is broken, while the spin rotation is not broken. And it already sounds like a VBS phase, valence bond solid phase. But one can be more precise. In the monopole condensed phase, electric fluxes doesn't want to be distributed or around the systems. And they get together and form a short link. And this is exactly due to the superconductors, where charge degree of freedom is condensed. And in the superconductors, magnetic fields doesn't want to be distributed all around the systems, right? And then they get together and form a small vortex. And the same thing happens here. If I condense the monopoles, then the electric fields doesn't want to be distributed all around the systems, but they get together and form a small link. And one can show that the electric flux is proportional to the bond order parameter or balance bond solid order parameters. So the monopole condensed phase corresponds to the VBS phase. you need to solve the hopping problems and then see the minimum. But there is a good argument for it from the Hastings theorem, but maybe I can explain later. Okay, if you solve the monopole hopping problems in the presence of the staggered fluxes, then the minimum is a finite momentum. So
I'm a little confused. So you started out talking about being proximate to a nail ordered state.
Yes.
To get the staggered charges, but now you're saying that actually the condensation is a VBS state.
Yes.
So maybe I should have thought about being close to a VBS state and figuring out what the charges look like.
In the VBS phase, what?
I mean, is the staggered charge story the same in the VBS state as it is in the nail state? Because you're not getting to the nail state, so why should I use the charges of the nail state?
Oh.
To play your game here.
You want spin like it, even though it's disordered, it has some information of the ordered phase.
Right, but the ordered phase here is VBS, not nail.
Yes.
So why should you start?
If you want to go to the nail phase, you need to condense the spinner, not the monopoles.
Yeah, sure.
And to reach the VBS phase, it cannot be random. It should have some information of the magnetically ordered phase. Okay. If you are asking me why, then I
guess I feel like there could be a nail phase like nowhere nearby. Like it could just be you want spin liquid in VBS and the nail is nowhere around.
No.
So then that's not possible, you're saying.
That's not the case. That's not the case. Yeah.
Okay.
So the monopole condensation in the spin case leads us to VBS or bond order phase where the monopole condensations because monopole condensation confines electric flux, that's why we end up with the VBS phase in the monopole condensed phase. Okay, and I'd like to compare these monopole condensations with the dion condensation in the topological motor insulators, where again the topological motor insulator is a U1 spin liquid with the topological band structures. So in the certain boundary conditions, you will have the external response. So we have a U1 gauge theory, so dion will naturally appear as an excitation. And we'd like to compare the dion condensations to the monopole condensations. Okay, there are some standard procedures for the monopoles, but what we do is basically replace monopoles by dions and go through the smaller steps. Okay, so we begin with the topological motor insulator phase where everything is gapped, every metal fields are gapped. So we can integrate out the metal fields to obtain the effective gauge theory. Then you have three terms, where two terms are familiar terms, but we have another term, which is axionic terms. And we'd like to introduce the dions in the theory. What we do is we introduce the monopole into the theory, where this rank 2 tensor is parameterizing the monopole 4 current. So if I introduce the monopole into this theory, then the axion term will turn the monopole into the dions. So dion will show up in the series. And again, as before, we'd like to obtain the effective series for the 4 current. And that is, we'd like to integrate out everything, sleeping on the direct lattices. So after quite long calculations, it's actually extremely wrong. But after the long calculation, we end up with only 2 terms. That's quite remarkable. Here, M mu is the dion 4 current, which carries electric and the magnetic charges at the same time. And they carry some electric charge and the magnetic charge at the same time. So they are interacting each other by the Coulomb interactions. And the first term is basically parameterizing the Coulomb interactions between the dions. They are interacting with the Coulomb interactions. And we have another terms where dion 4 current sees the static background gauge field. And this static background gauge field parameterizes these staggered background charges. So the theory we end up with is basically dions are hopping around in the presence of the staggered background charges. It's quite similar to the monopole condensation problems. So the dion will be moving around in the presence of the staggered background charges. And that is, the dion will experience some very phase, and the dion band dion band has its minimum and finite momentums, so dion condensation will break the translation symmetries. So up to this point, monopole condensation and the dion condensation looks very similar. They look very similar, but they are actually very they end up with a very different phase because dion is a monopole with electric charge. So dion is dion carries electric charge too. So if I condense the dions, then the electric flux and magnetic flux will be confined at the same time. In the monopole condensed case, we have only the electric flux confined without magnetic flux, but here dion condensations will confine the electric flux and magnetic flux at the same time. So the dion condensed phase should be a coexisting phase of the physical, the parameters corresponding to the electric flux and the magnetic flux. So it has two physical, the parameters in the dion condensed phase. And what we need to do is to identify the physical, the parameters corresponding to the electric flux and magnetic flux. And for the electric flux, we know that the electric flux is proportional to the BBS or bond order parameters. So dion condensation has a BBS order parameters in itself. But we would like to identify the magnetic flux too, because dion condensed phase is a coexisting phase of the BBS and some magnetic flux. And for the magnetic flux, one can show that the magnetic flux is symmetrically equivalent to the circulating current around the placket. So this and this are symmetrically equivalent. So the dion condensed phase will have the circulating electric current. Or in terms of the spin operators, you can write down the scalar correlates around the placket. So the dion condensed phase has two order parameters. First one is the bond order parameters, and the other is the scalar correlates or current order parameters. So dion condensed phase is a coexisting phase of the two order parameters, electric flux and the magnetic flux, which are corresponding to the bond order and the current order. Or in terms of the spins, you can write down the BBS and scalar correlates. And you break the every symmetries, basically translations, time reversals, and the invergence. And this is different from the monopole condensed phase, where you have only the bond order parameters. So this manifests the non-trivial physics associated with the axion terms. And for arbitrary axion angles, if I try to condense the dions, then the dion condensation always ends up with the two order parameters. So so this is the end of my first part of my talk. And if you have questions on the first part, I would like to. Sure.
Original parameters in the theory?
Like no.
You don't have an explicit form.
I don't know how to write down the hoping for the monopoles in terms of the original variables.
Okay, so you don't know where the dion condensation phase is on the phase diagram?
No, I cannot tell. If I go from the original theory to the dual series, then you can have some sort of heuristic arguments that some certain dual hoping parameter should correspond to something, but I don't have a exact matchings in this case.
Well, who is the original theory?
The original theory. I'm sorry. It's a disordered phase of the neo phase.
Right, but in terms of lattice model, mm-hmm. Lattice model for it.
Yes.
So you just described the Bloom lattice thing then. So is that the spin model?
Yes, it should belong to some spin model, but we work on the fractionalized degree of freedom, so I don't know the parent Hamiltonian.
Okay, I think it's just
yeah, but that they calculated in the mean field theory. They don't know.
DMI
yeah,
phase
yeah.
Of the, okay.
Yeah.
So it's like a particle model within the charge.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's just spin model. Yeah. Like Heisenberg, the exchange.
Yeah, like you add a lot of terms to
so step. So you with some. Right. Okay.
I don't know the parent Hamiltonian. No.
That's not the point of the word. You say there might be some lattice model that realizes this.
Yes. Okay.
because I had a follow-up question to that. So then, so what is there? Do you have a sense of like what term you would add to drive this connotation?
No, sorry, I don't know. But I hope there is some terms that can do the job.
So it's like this is sort of, so it's like proposing a phase, like it's proposing a certain phase.
Yes, yes. Okay. But it's allowed phase in terms of the gauge theory. That's what I can say.
How should I think about the scalar
chirality?
I suppose.
Oh, scalar chiralities. You take A, B, C, and then you take S, A. You basically overlap every color chirality around the plaquette.
What's the scalar
field?
What's the scalar field?
I'm sorry?
So there's no scalar, it's S dot.
Yeah, I mean the quantity is scalar.
So if you order S, you have a vector order, if you order this triple spin, you are the scalar. It's like a gauge field.
Yeah.
Second question, suppose this theory is a boundary of age.
Mm-hmm.
How should I think about the case that you have a diamond
To apply this theory strictly, the edges should be gapped out. So the edges should break time reverse symmetries. Because you'd like to have the axion terms.
And when there's some edge state, some
edge state is gapped out at the beginning of the theory. If I don't have any more questions, I'd like to move to the second part.
So I was trying to one more question. I had the same question that Brian had earlier about, you know, it's sort of, I mean, in my kind of poor man's way, I was thinking of what you're doing as like a kind of mean field theory where you sort of iterate or something. So you put in mail order and you do one iteration step and you end up with BBS order. So that's sort of like a red flag.
No, to plus,
but what I mean is it could maybe be a story at like a phase transition where it's sort of you start to have nail order at the phase transition, but then it's unstable to this story?
But the nail order and VVS phase are separated by a stable spin liquid phase, which is the U1 spin liquid state.
Oh, so it's really somewhere else. Like,
yeah, you have a separated. Okay, let me change gear a little bit and. Let me talk about the proximate phases of the Z2 spin liquid on the Kagoman lattice. And again, this work is done in collaboration with Yuanming Lu and Ashwin Viswanath. And I think I will be relatively short in the second part, but I will try to convey the basic idea and conclusions. So I begin with the Z2 spin liquid on the Kagoman lattice. Okay, so. We begin with the Heisenberg interaction on the Kagoman lattice, where spins are sitting on the site and interacting each other by the antiferromagnetic Heisenberg interactions. And one can see that the Kagoman lattice is highly frustrating, so it's a good place to look for the spin liquid. Okay, and recently the DMRG studies suggest. Okay, I should change suggest. A Z2 spin liquid as the ground state of the Heisenberg interactions on the Kagoman lattice. And the spin liquid, the proposed spin liquid is gapped spin liquid with some topological entanglement entropies. So after having the spin liquid phase in the numerical studies, the natural question is which spin liquid is realized in the DMRG studies. Because there are many different spin liquid states one can write down from the fermionic representation of the spin half. What I mean is I can introduce the Schrödinger fermions for the spin operators and then impose some local constraints. Then one can write down a lot of states for the in terms of the fermions. Then among the a lot of the proposed parton state, proposed projected wave functions, the relatively low energy state is the algebraic spin liquid, U1 algebraic spin liquid, where the fermions are hopping around the site while they have a pi flux on the honeycomb plaquehead of the Kagoman lattice. And this U1 algebraic spin liquid state features Dirac spectrum of the fermions and the U1 gauge series. And one quickly noticed that this is inconsistent with the DMRG result, where we found the Z2 spun like it with the gapped spectrums. So what should we do? Basically, we know this state is extremely good in energies, so it's likely to be a ground state of the Heisenberg interacting spins on the Kármán lattice. So what we do is to look for the gapped Z2 spin naked near the algebraic spin naked, in the hope that the resulting Z2 spin naked has a very good energies like the algebraic spin naked. So we'd like to obtain a Z2 spin naked near the algebraic spin naked, and this is studied by Yuanming Lu and Inglan and Patrick Lee. And what they did is they first break the U1 gauge group down to Z2 because DMRG studies found the Z2 spin naked. And how do we break the U1 gauge group down to Z2? What we do is simply introducing the pairings for the fermions. Okay, we introduce the pairing for the fermions. And we know that the DMRG study found the spin naked, which is invariant under the lattice symmetries and the spin rotation symmetries. So when you introduce the pairing for the Dirac fermions, the pairing should be invariant under the lattice symmetries and invariant under the spin rotation symmetries. Okay, that's another requirement. And we know that the Z2 spin naked found in DMRG is gapped. So this pairing should gap out the Dirac fermions. So we have these three requirements. And actually, these three requirements are enough in that there is one and only one such pairing satisfying these requirements. That is the S-ray pairings of the Dirac fermions or algebraic spin naked. And that state is named as Z2 0 pi beta state by Lu, Ran, and Li. Okay, we begin with this state. Okay, they propose this as the ground state of the Heisenberg interacting spins on the Kármán lattice. Then the next natural question is, what can you tell about this Z2 spin naked state? Our claim is, if this Z2 spin naked is the spin naked found in the DMRG studies, then the spin naked found in the DMRG should have very specific proximate phases separated by a continuous transitions from the spin naked. Okay, it's quite a strong statement. And the two proximate phases are Q0 non-collinear magnetically ordered state, and the other is VVS phase with very specific bond-bond correlations. Okay, how do we find the proximate phases of the spin naked? What we notice, the S-ray paired algebraic spin naked, the Z2 spin naked, is basically the same as S-ray paired Dirac fermions. And for the Dirac fermions, there are very special 5 tuple masses, which are anti-committing to themselves. And when the Dirac fermion is coupled to such mass terms, one can integrate out the fermions to obtain the Westruwenhoven terms. And the Westruwenhoven term tells me there could be an unconventional second order transitions between the two phases. Okay, and to be a little bit more precise, let me imagine the phase A and B, which are parameterized by these 5 mass terms. Okay, I have phase A and B. Then the Westruwenhoven term tells me that the topological defect in phase A carries the quorum numbers of the phase B, or the topological defect in phase B carries the quorum numbers of the phase A. So the condensation of the topological defect in phase A will destroy the ordering in phase A, but it will induce the ordering in phase B at the same time. I know it's hard to understand in one slide, but let me try to go through. And so if I condense the defects in phase A, then I end up with the phase B by a single continuous phase transitions, because I condensed something. And in our context, the most important 5 mass terms are S-ray pairings and the vector colloids. They are intercommitting to themselves. And S-ray pairings with some bond order parameters, which are intercommitting to themselves again. So what I try to show is, if I have a S-ray pairings with the vector colloids and they form the Westruwenhoven series, then we begin with the Z2 spin naked where the pairing is non-zero. And we have another phase where vector colloids is non-zero. Then the Westruwenhoven theory tells me I have continuous transitions between the two phases. And if I look at the defect, which is Vizon in the Z2 spin kill state, then because of the best Juvenile Witten series, Vizon carries spin half. So if I condense the Vizon, then the Vizon will destroy the Z2 spin kill state. But
sorry, can you repeat why this has spin one half?
Because of the best Juvenile Witten series.
Okay, so that's pretty good.
Yeah, quantum numbers of the vector quality is rotating under the spin rotations. So that's how you guess that Vizon should carry some spin spins in the, yeah. Or one can work out explicitly to show that the Vizon is carrying some spin half, but that takes much room for calculations.
Question? Is this vector chirality related to triple product, or is it S cross S? Or
S cross S, taken around the honeycomb placket over the Kagome lattice.
S cross S.
Yes. So it's invariant under the time reversal operations. So the Vizon carries some spin quorum numbers. So if I condense the Vizons, then I should end up with some magnetically ordered state because Vizon carries spin numbers. And this phase should carry some vector qualities too, but there are many possibilities. But with some other ingredients, like the monopole quorum numbers of the algebraic spin liquid and the structure of the Z2 spin liquid, you can determine the magnetically ordered state precisely as a Q-Couture state. This is very specific state that I'll show soon. And what I established is, I start with a fermionic spin liquid, and that has a continuous transition to the Q-Couture non-collinear magnetically ordered state. So we establish the continuous transitions to the magnetically ordered state. And the Q-Couture state looks like this, where we have spin orderings in one triangles, and then you translate them without rotations. Then you can see that there is some vector qualities non-zero around the honeycomb placket, which is definition of the vector qualities for the algebraic spin liquid. So, so let me give you some conclusions. Conclusions for what we studied. So we begin with the algebraic spin liquid, and you add the SOI pairings to end up with the Z2 zero pi beta state for the fermions. And we have a Juvenile-Witten series written in terms of the pairings and the vector qualities. Then I have a continuous transitions toward the Q-Couture state. And one can work out the criticalities, and one can show that it has an O-force matrix at the critical points. And actually, this information tells me that the fermionic spin liquid is the same as a Q1 equal Q2 bosonic spin liquid studied by Sachdev. And I will be a little bit more precise here. The Vizon of the Z2 zero pi beta state carries some spin half, as I showed before. And the Vizon behaves exactly the same as the bosonic spinon in the Q1 equal Q2 bosonic spin liquid. So we established the dualities between the fermionic spin liquid and the bosonic spin liquid. Okay? And again, we have another Juvenile-Witten series written in terms of the pairings and the bond orderings. And we have another continuous transitions toward the VBS phase, which has some interesting features. And yeah, this is the end of my second part.
So can you go back?
Okay.
Is there any relation between the second order phase conditions and the algebraic spin liquid that we started from the U1?
No.
They are not related.
They are related in some sense, but I
they are not the same. I mean,
they are not the same. This is not the algebraic spin liquid. I don't claim this criticality is the U1 spin liquid. That's not the case.
Okay.
Here, fermion is always gapped, actually.
Sorry?
Here, in these transitions, the fermions are gapped.
Oh, yeah. Something
else. In the algebraic spin liquid, you have gapless fermions, but here the fermions are always gapped, and the bosons are condensing. And
can the series tell you about like actual terms you can add to the
calculator? That's always a difficult question.
More interested in this case?
Okay, what we know is for the Q1 equal Q2 bosonic spin liquid, if I have a J1 and J2 at the same time, then I can stabilize stabilize the Z2 spin decay a little bit when the Z2 doesn't go over certain critical values. When you go over the critical values, you end up with a mathematically ordered state. Yeah. But I don't have any understanding about this train, how to derive this. I don't know.
You mentioned about this vector chirality.
Yes.
Now, based on general grounds, can you exclude scalar chirality? Because the way you argue that there is a special topological term, or
yes,
human Hamiltonian term,
yes,
which favors this kind of
yes,
symmetric breaking. So have you analyzed that possibility, which can have S dot S cross S, which when translated into this Schwinger fermion pairing will be like D plus ID pairing?
We begin with the very specific Z2 spin like a state.
Right. And so which is gapless?
Which is gapped. The Z2 okay, spin like is gapped. This is gapless.
Okay, I mean with reference to the algebraic spin like, which
yes,
is gapless. There you said that the old work by Patrick and others
yes,
paired in S wave state.
Yes.
You can also pair in D wave state, D plus ID in particular.
Yes.
Which corresponds to in terms of spin,
yes,
scalar
chirality. Yes.
So how is that excluded in terms of, is there any energy argument or some work?
I think in the DMRG studies, they don't see the scalar chiralities.
They do not.
They do not. So I don't. I
so
think if
no
I want to have D plus ID type superconductors, D plus ID spin lattice, I need the spin lattice to have a long range orderings,
right?
But
so
they don't see the long range ordering of the scalar chirality. So.
But earlier you said, right, so that would not be a spin lattice anymore if you had that.
That's, I'm sorry.
So earlier you said that you ended up with this particular gap spin lattice.
Yes.
Because when you start from the U1, the algebraic
yes,
spin liquid, and
yes,
you want to add terms that are compatible with
yes, symmetric
invariants
yes,
and the symmetries of the Hamiltonian,
yes,
space symmetries of the
yes,
that completely depends.
I think I should input the time real symmetry too.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
So it's true that one?
Yeah. And then even though my argument was, okay, there was their study is not, they studied all possible PSGs, and then even though I used some heuristic arguments, but I end up with the same state. And I think they consider the time reversal symmetry too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Would you then mention how they consider?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, there was actually some recent numerical study of these projected wave functions.
Mm-hmm.
In which they studied like this state in particular, and they found that this U1 spin liquid is very stable with respect
yes,
to this thing.
Mm-hmm.
So does that suggest there could be some other, like maybe I shouldn't start from this Dirac theory, or should I do something else? Do you have any ideas about like what if the Z2 05 beta thing is really not very good at energy, then maybe it's I mean is it yeah, is there something else that may be appropriate?
Let me be a little bit careful. Okay, this state doesn't tell me energies of the full phase. I mean,
sure,
this is particular representation of the full phase. And then the full phase might have other wave functions that has much better energies than the algebraic spin kit, but the topological aspects of this state should survive all
course,
the phase
yeah,
diagrams. So I don't claim this state is the ground state of the Heisenberg interacting column lattice, but this state might represent the phase of the.
So you're saying your hope is that the very naive projected wave function
mm-hmm,
that you would write down from this mean field theory is not a very good wave function, but it's still this still this phase.
I hope so.
Okay.
And then this study will give me the
yeah,
clue. If they found the proximate phase is like critical dual state, and then this VBS phase, then this is the spin like we found in the DMRG studies.
The prediction of what we need to look for numerically.
Yeah. I don't know how to write down the projected wave functions that has better energy than the algebraic spin like it, but.
But are there other even simpler things? Like you said, the Weisslein should have a spin hat.
Yes.
Right, so that should be pretty easy to see, right?
Sure.
We'll make two visons and see if there's a four-fold degeneracy. The correlation is supposed to be very small, right? It's like a few lattice sites.
Uh-huh. No, it has a catch, right? So that's for one noun state, but if you try to get these excitations,
yeah,
they come with their own correlation length.
Which is what, does that mean, they come with their own correlation length?
It just means, so there is another noun state which one can obtain on an infinite cylinder.
Right. Uh-huh.
And this, the correlation length on this second noun state is much larger than the first noun state. So actually, this second noun state is compatible with having a bison and with Spinman Hoffman. So that's why it's quite exciting that this theory predicts that.
Okay, so there is some positive evidence for this theory.
Well, this second noun state has a correlation length comparable to the width of the cylinder, so it's time not to trust the numerical results. But if you want to, well, it looks good.
I mean, it's better than like not seeing anything. That's probably pretty bad. Mm.
Can you show the conclusion of the previous?
Okay.
Because I missed your talk, I won't. That part. No, the.
Oh, the first one.
Yeah. Whatever I can learn.
If you want, I can explain you personally.
Sure. Thank you.
But one more question is like, when you say proximate, like phases should be proximate. On like a really naive level, it just depends on how I change my programming as to what. I mean, it's like I can imagine going all these different directions away from the and I'll end up in different places, just
depending
on which directions I choose to go. So what makes something just approximate? I mean, I get it in the picture of, you know what I mean? Like, I get in the picture you had that there's some kind of natural like excitation or something that makes those phases
next to it.
But I mean, but I'm trying to think, how does that translate? Like,
yes. Yeah. That's all I can say. But I don't know how to drive the phase transitions.
But you're saying proximate means can be reached through a phase transition. Some part of the meaning.
Yeah. So I was careful that the transition is second order.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Okay. So you're saying if I just add something, then I go to some other phase, but it's restored. That's just not what you mean by proximate.
No.
Okay. So I don't count that as a clue.
Maybe you can say proximate phase by first order transitions, but I don't see any special relations between the two phases separated by the first order transitions, right? You can get, if you have two phases, then the natural guess for the transition is the first order. Why should it be the second order?
Okay, thanks, that's an interesting question.
Yeah. And other questions? Should people?
Oh, yes. So we have the problem with organizing the schedule. So last week will be all of tomorrow.
Yes.
And part of Friday.
Yes, Friday. I leave at Friday 4 p.m.
So tomorrow we have three talks. Two physically. Well, two speakers will be here physically. The other one will be online. And Friday we have three more talks. but in between, it would be good if we take the time, use the time to meet with the visitors.
That's kind of
sure.
Yeah.
So maybe.